This episode is brought to you by Mountain Sea Media. I spent half my life near the Pacific Ocean and the other half in the mountains of Central Oregon. These places are full of profound stories and experiences that guide my life, even now as a media creator and a beer professional. This is how Mountain Sea Media was born. I realized how impactful stories are to our lives and business. Stories share good experiences and the warmth of friends. They improve business by sharing these experiences and connecting deeply with our customers. If you'd like to connect better with your customers through copywriting and storytelling, contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com. It's your story. I'll help you tell it. Welcome to episode 24 of Good Beer Matters.
We will be able to talk about a Catalan way of doing beer or a Spanish way of doing beer. Barcelona is now the leader of the beer scene. Drinking late in a bar, talking with your family, with your friends, trying to make a better world. Show you a place that you're going to love. I mean, it's a lifetime experience.
In this episode, we continue our series exploring good beer in Europe by visiting Barcelona. Although a part of Spain, this Mediterranean city is also the capital of the autonomous nation of Catalonia. Barcelona is a diverse and progressive city full of 1.6 million thirsty people who generally prefer wine, vermouth, or even a gin and tonic. Despite that, finding good Belgian or German beer or even a decent lager from a giant company is easy. But finding a good, locally made craft beer is still somewhat of a challenge. However, all of that is changing as Barcelona is taking its place in the world beer community due in part to the Barcelona Beer Festival, but especially to one of its organizers. Allow me to introduce you to Joan.
So, el meu nom és Joan Villay Martí, soc escriptor de cervesa.
My name is Joan Villay Martí. I'm a beer writer. I mainly write for my blog, beerwriter.com. And I'm also part of the organization of the Barcelona Beer Festival.
My name is Jeremy. I'm a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge, IBD certified brewer, and a beer writer. I believe the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. I believe there's a world of wisdom found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. This is Good Beer Matters. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 24 of Good Beer Matters with Catalan beer writer and co-organizer of the Barcelona Beer Festival, Joan Villay Martí. Talk about beer, and I want to find out more about how you got interested in beer, how you got started writing a blog in beer, and then how you got started with the Barcelona Beer Festival and consulting. Will you tell us that story?
Yeah, of course. Thing is, when I was young, quite young, I'd say, I started drinking beer because I liked it. It was not meant to be a way of getting drunk. It was because it felt all right, but it also tasted good. So I began exploring about beer. Exploring at that time meant going to the supermarket or the bars and try to find out what was all that. Trying to guess what were these flavors, the differences between a Belgian beer and a German beer maybe, all this kind of stuff. I had tasted like 50 or 60 or 70, I don't know, different beers in 2007. And I thought that I knew lots about beer, that I was an expert. I had just drunk beer, not more than that. Then I started my job as a financial consultant for banks. And my first assignment was in Brussels. I was very happy because I knew about Belgian beer, so it was a good opportunity for me to get deep on that. And my first night in there, I went to this place to have supper and cherry beer. Had never heard of it, a creek, Mm-hmm. And well, it was okay. The waiter came back and said, "Did you like that?" And I said, "Oh yeah, it's curious. I had never seen that." And he told me, "Do you want to try the good stuff, the real stuff?" I said, "Okay, want the real stuff." So the guy brought a bottle of Cantillo and Creek.
Mm.
And at first I thought it was a joke because it was sour, so sour for my taste buds. But it seemed like a joke at first, but I kind of enjoyed it when it was finishing. And the day after, I went to the place and asked for another beer. And I said, "I want the real stuff again." And the guy brought it to me, and I enjoyed that bottle very much. And that's the point when I realized that I knew nothing about beer, because I didn't know at that time that beer could be sour.
Hmm.
So my reaction was buying books. I bought 2 books, read them all, bought 2 more. Then I realized that there were some blogs online talking about beer, which was like, what the fuck? Why is people writing about beer online, and what do they say about it? So I started reading those blogs, following them, eager to see if they had published anything new. Social media was very basic at that time, so it was mostly blog rolls and following and going to each page individually. And then one day I started writing my own stuff, first offline, but then I thought that it would be good that I could share it with other people, mainly because I had began to interact with some other bloggers, and I thought that it would be good if we could just take the interaction one step further. That's how I began writing about beer, and well, from writing those first posts to getting involved to organizing a festival, well, it's about getting people who read your stuff and appreciate it, getting to meet people at festivals. All this kind of stuff happened between 2011 and 2012. That's when I became involved with the Barcelona Beer Festival.
Mm.
And from that point on, the beer scene has been growing and growing each year. And you get the opportunity to do lots of things in this industry.
That's fantastic. What were the first 2 books that you purchased and started reading?
My first 2 books were Randy Mosher's Tasting Beer. And it was 1001 Beers you Have to Try Before You Die by Edwin Tierney Jones.
That's interesting. I've looked at your blog and I saw that you posted those 2 books, and I kind of thought there might be a story there. But in 2015, summer of 2015, my family and I went to Spain, and we first arrived in Barcelona and stayed there for 4 days, I think it was. And I had already made the decision to pursue beer professionally, and I had some passion behind that, but I have to give credit where it's due that it was in Barcelona, and then we were in Mallorca in Madrid. I was there actually doing the family thing and the tourist thing, but I was also on a side project of trying to find craft beer in Spain. Ended up doing a little doing a little film about it, but on the plane to and from United States, and in between all the traveling and the trains, I was reading Randy Mosher's book and just discovering the wealth of the culture. And it was that book, and it was in Spain, where it just finally all clicked, and I realized that there's so much more to this drink than we even understand. And I fell in love with beer and food while I was in Spain.
Yes, that book was an eye opener for me too. It was I did my research first, trying to figure out which was the best book to buy, and everything pointed in that direction.
Yeah.
Plus, I also wanted a book that could help me sort out the thing about beer tasting. I mean, understanding what was inside my glass. So I thought that a book with 1,001 beers in it, maybe I could find some of those and try to figure out if I was feeling the same things that were written in the book. So that was my thought. Yeah, these two books were really important for me, and it was funny because like 2 or 3 years ago at the Barcelona Beer Festival, Adrian Turner-Jones got to visit us. And I could explain to him.
I'm sorry, say that again. You met who?
Adrian Turner-Jones.
Okay.
The writer of the second book. And I could explain to him what his book had meant to me at that moment. And I got him to sign him, to sign the book. So it was special. Plus about the things that you say. Beer Food 2015, you could actually find some decent stuff, I think, in Barcelona, maybe some in Mallorca and also Madrid, because in 2015 there were already some very nice places that have started up.
Yeah.
So you came in a good year.
Well, and that was that whole trip was a bit of a revelation in just seeing how what appeared to me, and it's been corroborated by a number of people since, that the craft beer in Spain was kind of like what the U.S. was going through somewhere around the 90s, give or take. It was just emerging. But the thing that impressed me the most was that the culinary scene, the winemaking scene in Spain was so dominant and so mature and so complex that all of these people who were making beer were already had that mindset and that training and understood that beer should be a gastronomic type of beverage, and so they would step in very, very mature to begin with. And I thought that was a very compelling reason that to come back to Spain at some point and see where it is now.
Yeah, you should really come. Every year we are one step further than we were. What's hot right now, and it's kind of related to what you were saying about the wine industry here, is that we're seeing now that some brews, I mean, they were already doing it by 2015, I think, but now they have such a perfection in some cases that it's amazing to taste it. I mean, they're getting the grapes and putting them into beer. They're getting the casks and putting the beer in so that they can barrel age with wine barrels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things are now evolving to trying to find a local character for our beer. We're still newborns in this direction. But I think that maybe in 10 years, we will be able to talk about a Catalan way of doing beer or a Spanish way of doing beer, because the brewers and the industry as a whole has realized that, I mean, it's okay trying to clone those beers that you love, mainly from the United States, also some European styles. But you cannot beat the breweries in the States who have been doing it for long, and they have the machinery, have the capital, have everything in place to do those kind of beers. Mostly I would highlight the ingredients. You cannot compete with that, but you can try to do very good stuff in terms of freshness for all this hoppy stuff, while at the same time trying to make this own beer. I mean, every place with a tradition has its own beer. I would say that now the United States could be a traditional beer country, a very contemporary one, but there's a big it's been a big source of beer styles, of different ways to do beer. So even though it's contemporary, you could say there's a tradition in there, well, apart from the historic smells. And that's where we should be heading. We have to think and talking with our local brewers, you realize that they see that this is the way. We have to have our own beer. Something that when travelers come here, know that they can taste these beers that are just made in here. Something which is attractive for beer geeks, apart from our style and our food. Mm-hmm. We also have to have attractive beer and not just clones of whatever the rest of the world is doing.
Well, and that's where back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, there were a lot of Americans that were drinking horrible beer, but we're heading off to Germany and Belgium and England and realizing what beer could be, what it ought to be. And then of course they come back and then they start all these wonderful breweries that brought us to where we are now. And I'm also aware that there are a lot of people from Europe and other places that are coming to America thinking, oh, this IPA is phenomenal. Let's make this back where we are. But I'm particularly interested in, I don't want to see American beer or American innovations or American versions of German and Belgian and English style beers proliferate around the world. I can't wait to see 10 plus years from now to see how these Spanish styles, these Catalan styles, how we start adding styles to the BJCP guidelines. Here's a Southern Italian version of such and such, and here's a gastro ale from Logroño. These are things that I can't wait to see, and I hope it happens in my lifetime. I think it will, but I'd love to be on the ground when I see it happening.
Yes. Next time you come, now that we have been talking, of course we have to meet, drink a beer together, talk calmly without a microphone.
Of course.
And I'll try to show you a place that you're going to love. I mean, it's a lifetime experience, and it's just here. It's a very small village, and well, in the outskirts of that village, there's a mazia. We call it a mazia. It's like a farmhouse.
Okay.
In which they produce spontaneously fermented beer.
Hmm.
Apart from very nice plain pale ales, which are super drinkable, kind of British style, but with its own character.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the more authentic thing that we have here. Plus the people who run this business. I mean, it's not a business. It's actually a home in which they produce beer and they do fantastic food. And you really have to experience that. I will try next time that you come to Barcelona, I will try to book some time for you and try to get you to that place, because you have to see it for yourself.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. My wife and I are forming plans now, and this is going to be on the podcast, but we are hoping to make it over there in the winter of 2020, which I realized that would get us there around the time of the Barcelona Beer Festival. So I'm going to have to make sure I go to that as well. So if that's the case, I will definitely look you up and so we can at least have a beer together. But before we talk about the Barcelona Beer Festival, I wanted to just kind of check on the state of things. When I was in Barcelona in 2015, I had a hard time finding a brewery. But of course, as soon as I get home and I look online, I realized, oh, I was surrounded by them, but they were not easily found just by a traveling tourist. What is the state of craft breweries in Barcelona these days?
Well, thing about Barcelona is until 2012, well, let me pinpoint something. In 2005, we got our first microbrewery. There was a movement of home brewers dating back from the 90s. After the first brew pub in Barcelona, the Barcelona Brewing Company had closed.
Okay.
The owner, which was a Liverpoolian, Steve Huxley, he started teaching how to homebrew to a group of people, 1994. After that, those people, well, they began dating each other to try to do some beer together, all this kind of stuff. They built this association called Humulus Lupulus, which is Latin for hop. And these are the people who, 10 years after, would start up the first microbreweries in this country. So from 2005, that the first microbrewery started up, to 2011, I would say that we were in a very I don't pick the word well. It was like our first step as a beer scene.
It was the birth of craft beer in Barcelona. The birth is like the nacimiento.
Yes. Yes, but the thing is, it was not in Barcelona, most of it.
Okay.
It was scattered across the geography. But then in 2012, when we organized the first Barcelona Beer Festival, it was like a big realization that there was enough public for beer. We were expecting like 2,000, our best estimates were like, okay, this could be okay if we are around 2,000 people. Most of the people that we knew were like, no, you're not getting there. There's no 2,000 people interested in beer here in Barcelona, but in craft beer. And it turned out that we were 10,000. So
the first year was 10,000?
10,000 people came to the event, to the first edition.
Wow.
It was a huge success. And it was actually a turning point for the scene as a whole and for Barcelona, because it was like a big realization that there was enough people to try to think big about beer.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, from 2012, which is just 6 years ago, to now, we have like more than 100 bars in which you can drink craft beer in Barcelona. We have like two, maybe three different places in 2012. Now we have more than 100.
Wow.
Plus the city now has around seven or eight breweries, I think. I mean, Barcelona is now the leader of the beer scene here. While when before 2012, it was like there was no leader. It was like a very scattered movement of people. So from that point on, it's been easier for people traveling to Barcelona to find things about craft beer. So 2015, several of these places were already on. But I mean, still, it's unless you have the right directions or you really have a look through Facebook or whatever. I mean, it's not super obvious when you walk down the street that you're just like passing by different beer bars,
mm-hmm.
and the breweries are not at all in the center of the city, except maybe one. So you have to go there. I mean, they're in the outskirts mostly, because Barcelona is quite an expensive city. So trying to have a brewery in the center of the city is like very, very difficult.
Yeah, and that's probably why we I believe we were near the center of the city. We were a very short train ride to La Sagrada Familia and La Barceloneta. In fact, I remember the name of the restaurant associated with our hotel was the Ciudad Comtal. And so we were there. And so just trying to go around, even just trying to find a bar that had something besides Mao and Dam and all these other beers, it was hard to find. I think I found my first Spanish craft beer while we were in Mallorca. We went to the town of Sóller and found a Sullerica and bought both of those. And it was just it was so good, but it was so. I don't want to say it was so different because it takes someone paying attention to notice the difference of the style, but it was, you could tell it was locally made. It was well made. It was tasty. It was delicious. And, that was another pivotal moment as finding those beers.
Yeah. It's a shame that you couldn't find, craft beer in Barcelona. Nowadays it's quite easy because even normal bars, even there you can find maybe a tap with Brewdog maybe,
okay,
or a couple of bottles of Edge Brewing, which is one of the breweries in the city. It's getting easier every year to find something apart from the usual stuff in most parts of the city. And well, apart from that, you also have, like I said, more than 100 places in which you can buy a decent amount of craft beer. So it's, and things are getting interesting here every year.
Yeah,
we have been having this story every year that that's the boom. Things are going to go down five from this point on. It cannot grow more. All these apocalyptic messages have been going on like forever, that it never, the balloon never burst. Yeah. I mean, it's not a balloon. It's something that came here to stay.
Well, I live in Oregon on the west coast of the United States, and we hear the same thing. The beer bubble is going to burst with Portland, with Bend, with San Diego, California, with Washington and Colorado. We keep hearing that there's a beer bubble that's going to burst, but it hasn't. There are even more breweries coming into Bend and Portland, and everyone's... And it seems to be getting harder to carve out your piece of the pie, unless you come in and have just a really, really interesting niche. And there are a few of those breweries that are coming in just doing something different. Those are, I think, the brilliant ones. But it just seems that there are more people drinking beer. Even with, especially in Oregon, we have craft sake, we have craft whiskey, we have some wonderful wines. There's no shortage of some sort of vice to imbibe in, but it just seems to be getting better and better and better. And so maybe that's the bubble that's going to burst, is all the people who are not keeping up with the quality and the innovation. Maybe those are the ones that will burst, but I don't see it going away.
No, I think that in every country that you can find a beer scene, it's the same story all over. It's like, no, that's a bubble, it's gonna burst, and things are getting better and better and better because there's enough people who want to drink this beer, and there's people who have new ideas. They put them in place so that something new happens, and the guys who are already in there have to keep up with that. We have been seeing it with the first microbrewery that I was talking about before, in 2005, 2007, 2008. All these guys have either specialized in brewing very specific kind of beer. They have found their niche, or if they wanted to be a general player, which most of our brewers are, they had to invest. They had to keep up with the things. They couldn't they couldn't continue doing what they were doing 10 years ago, because 10 years ago we didn't have the ingredients that we have today. We didn't have access to all the business channels that have opened up with Europe in terms mm-hmm. of the brewing industry. Plus, you get to know brewers from other countries, get to talk to them, you get to do some collaborations, you get to learn what they know. There's a lot of exchange today, and of course what was okay 10 years ago, it is not okay now. So the guys that started this have had a hard time actually trying to keep up with it, but some of them have done, and they're doing very well, because I mean, they're veterans of the industry, which I mean, experience is fine, but at the same time, they had the guts, and they were brave enough not to say, oh, no, we're doing fine. We don't need to innovate. We don't need to try to put some new machinery. Whatever we have, it's already working. So why should we bother? So some of them have made a big change in terms of everything, in terms of what a company is, in terms of the way they operate, in terms of the stuff that they deliver to the consumer. So it's very nice, and I especially like these stories of reinventing the company, mm-hmm. reinventing the people that work in those places. Most of them started like brewing, doing the accountancy, the marketing, even the distribution, all the stuff, and now they can do whatever they're good at. And they have a team, and they have specialists for every area in the company. I mean, they're still small, but things have been evolving, and I like these stories of companies that knew how to keep up with the industry, with the state of the industry.
Yeah, hearing those stories of the companies who refuse to change, think that the new fad is not gonna change anything, but years later that the change is like going from film and a camera to now digital, and those companies that stuck with film, that we don't really talk about them anymore. But beer's the same way. We have breweries here in the U.S. where the beer that they make is really good, but it was innovative 30 years ago, and they're being out competed today, or they're not keeping up with the consumer who. Maybe this is a blessing, maybe this is annoying, but the craft beer consumer these days tends, at least in the U.S., tends not to be loyal to any brand or any even style. They want to try that Sour Creek from Cantillon, or the Dissident from Deschutes, or the latest IPA, or the latest Australian IPA, or because they're... It seems that we realize that food is an adventure. Food is an experience, and beer, wine, all that stuff is part of that understanding your world. And when you were talking about that farm near you and how they're doing spontaneous fermentation type beers, I think the role of terroir in wine is obvious, but the role of terroir in beer, I think, will become more evident as the Spanish brew their IPAs, and the Italians brew their IPAs, and the Dutch brew their IPAs, and then they compare them with American IPAs, which is already compared to British IPAs, and then we all sit them on the table, and like people like you and me will sit around and say, how is this different? Why? What am I tasting in your IPA versus mine? And I think that is the moment that I hope I'm at the table for that.
Indeed, yes. We also have these hop farmers now. I mean, it's something that has been happening for 3 or 4 years.
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you about the ingredients, hops and barley in Spain. I think when I was there I asked someone about that, and if I remember correctly, I think there was one area in Spain that was growing hops, but otherwise it all had to be imported from Germany or the U.S. I'm hoping that's changed.
Yes, there's a region in Spain around León which have been growing hops like forever. And they mostly produce the hops for the big guys in the industry. Now in León they're also trying new varieties. I think that they had always done fuddled, and now they're trying new varieties. But apart from that, there are several small farmers who are trying to grow hops from other parts of the world. Plus, which is very interesting, some of them are also trying to breed some of the hops that we get wild in the side of rivers, so that we can have our own hop. It's not a Cascade hop grown in Catalonia, but it's a hop that was growing in a river just a mile from here, and I'm trying to grow it so to see if I can maybe make a hop variety out of it that works well with beer.
Yeah.
So we're in that moment, and in terms of barley, there's an interesting project, an interesting brewery, which is a full circle brewery. They're growing their barley, they're growing their hops, they have their own yeast.
Okay.
So they're trying to make beer. I mean, not all the varieties. I mean, they're using certain specialty malts and of course certain hops too for some of the varieties that they launch. But they're year after year moving one step closer to be able to produce all the beer that they do with their own product. It's very interesting. It's very interesting growing your own barley, malting it, your own hops, your own yeast, and making beer with that. Just with that. I mean, you guys in the States, you have certain breweries who actually do this, but it's something very new for us. But at the same time, this is a kind of a small project. I mean, it's three people who do all this stuff at that brewery. So
sure.
So it's interesting.
But that's where I think that's the seed that will eventually become something bigger. And like I said, hopefully 10, 15 years from now, that, you know, Spain has its own style of beers that is known and people acknowledge it. But even you mentioned Cascade. You know, Cascade was a hop that was born out of Oregon State University, but has just taken over the U.S. and the world. I'm aware of, but I had a conversation with John Meyer from Rogue Brewery, and he mentioned back in, I think it was 2006, we had a significant hop shortage due to a big fire in Washington and all that. And so they actually started trying to get Cascade hops from Argentina, and he said it tasted totally different. And to me, I was thinking, even if we have the same variety of malt, let's say we have like a half pint malt and we have Cascade hops, if they're grown in Catalonia versus Oregon, those are going to be two completely different tasting beers. And that's the part that I think is going to be interesting. The ingredients genetically are the same, but that's where the terroir will come into place. That'll be an interesting thing.
It's not the same growing a plant, whatever the plant is, in a soil which is affected by the weather and the climate differently from another place. Plus, the soil is not the same. The composition of that soil is not the same everywhere. So you get different products. You get a different product. If the seeds are the same, and if the you can say the source is actually the same. Like Cascade here doesn't taste like Cascade in the States at all.
No, not at all.
So it's interesting. It's interesting this stuff too.
Well, I do want to, there's a couple big things I want to make sure we talk about with the time we have. I want to talk about the festival, the competition. But before we dive into that topic, I want to hear about the culinary scene around Barcelona and the beer and the food pairings I want to get a sense of how you think about beer and food and how you approach beer and food.
Beer and food here. We're still fighting against the widespread belief that only wine matches food. Mm-hmm. When actually beer can perform better with a wider range of food. But still, there's a component which is very cultural about this.
Mm-hmm.
People think about beef and wine just at the same time, while trying to fit beer with beef. It's like, oh, I don't know. But just think about the burgers,
mm-hmm.
Or spicy stuff. Beer matches it very well. So. I mean, it has lots of opportunities. Beer has lots of opportunities to show that it's a good beverage to pair with food. That's what we beer geeks are trying to show to many people here locally.
Mm-hmm.
When people think about pairing food and beer, it's like just okay, it's a refreshment. For my burger, it's a refreshment for my chips and olives and whatever. No, I mean, you can actually pair it. You just have to go to Brussels and experience it yourself. But
mm-hmm.
it's still hard for people to, even though that I would say that generally people are very open-minded about trying new stuff here. And that most people see something different and good in craft beer, it's still very difficult for them to swap beer for wine. And I have to say, I don't believe that we have to swap beer for wine. I mean, wine, beer, cider, all kind of spirit, they can be in the table too. I mean, it's good that that all kind of beverages are used to pair with food. I mean, you just have to pick the good one,
mm-hmm.
the best one,
mm-hmm.
to match your food. And in some cases, it'll be wine. In some cases, it'll be cider. In some cases, it'll be beer. But still, people think that if you have something good on your dish, you should get a good wine with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still trying to fight this belief, this strong belief that people have.
But I think people need to understand that the perception of wine being a better drink or a higher brow drink actually comes from the Holy Roman Empire thousands of years ago. And that was just something that carried over from millennia to generation. And if we stop thinking about the socioeconomic status or the cost of drinks equating to the quality of drinks, which as an economist, you know that that's not correct. But if we think of beer or even wine as a tool, if we think of it as a flavor profile, and frankly, I love wine. I just happen to be a beer guy. But if we understand these as flavor profiles or more colors to draw with, then we just have a much better chance to have an incredible experience. And so I agree. I think wine drinkers need to add beer to their food experience and vice versa.
Yeah, but here. All the population is wine drinkers,
yeah.
So it's hard for them to see that even a good product that they can appreciate can actually be sometimes a good match for the food that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult, it's tricky, but it helps that certain good restaurants here locally, they have their own beer menu.
Mm.
And they compare it with food too. I would like to highlight one specific restaurant in Barcelona. Okay. It's called El Racó d'en Fesc. You have to try this one next time. You're going to love it because apart from very good traditional Catalan food, the sommelier he's a beer geek.
He's
very knowledgeable, and he can actually pair their menu with beer totally, and he will explain everything about the beer, everything about the food, why he chose that match instead of another. So it's a really good experience for a person who likes food.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's a very good experience for a beer geek because it's like, okay, that was exactly what I wanted to show people, that good food can be matched with good beer.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
They also have wine, of course. But if you want the beer experience, you can have a full beer experience with the food there, and it's really enjoyable. And these guys, yeah, guys are really good and professional.
Well, and that would be interesting to order a dish or a couple dishes and get the beer and the wine that the sommelier recommends and just compare the experience. That would be a fascinating thing.
Well, I'll tell the guy, I'll tell the sommelier that he should organize an event sometime in the future just to try the experience. I mean, it's not like determining which is best. I mean, it's just different beverage and it's different experience, different palates, mm-hmm. different everything. But I think that it would be challenging in terms of what people think that they know about food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a challenge. Maybe you say no. Beer was good, but wine's still better for me. It works better for me, and it's a good conclusion. I mean, it's actually something which is totally subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But as a challenge or as a way to try to see clearly what your tastes are. I mean, that would be a good experience. I will tell the guy.
Yeah.
I will text him now and say that he should try it at some point.
Well, and frankly, I've put together and hosted events where we had we were at a wine tasting room, and the winemaker was there talking about his wine, and then we had a cheesemonger talking about the cheese, and I was there talking about the beer. And my goal wasn't to bring wine drinkers to the beer side. I, like I said before, I wanted people to understand that add this to your toolbox. You have wine, you have beer, you have the cheese, but understand how the beer interacts with the cheese, understand how the wine interacts with the cheese, and neither is good or bad, but just understand you now have choice and you now have the education to choose your experience. And that was the whole goal, and I think that worked out really well. We had a lot of people that were I don't know the expression in Spanish or Catalan, but there were a few people who we blew their mind. They didn't know what to think about it. Let's talk a little bit about the Barcelona Beer Festival and the Barcelona Beer Competition. Again, a funny story. In fact, I'll send you a link to this film that I put together while I was in Spain. I think you'd appreciate it. But I did borrow a picture of the Barcelona Beer Festival and put it at the end of it, just because, like I said, we just got into Barcelona. We're trying to get the map, the culture, the language under our feet. And it wasn't until we hit Mallorca and Madrid, where things started coalescing. But as soon as we get back to the U.S., I started doing some more research on beer in Spain, beer in Barcelona, and that's when I discovered the Barcelona Beer Festival, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to go to that one of these days. And it appears that it's becoming not just a big deal or a big thing, but a huge deal and a huge thing. Will you talk about the festival?
Yes. As I told you before, it started like as a something they wanted to grow big. I don't think that the original organizers would have never thought that it could grow that big.
Mm.
I have to say that when I see the original organizers, these were four people. Then on that same first edition in 2012, I just attended as a drinker. But that same year when we got those 10,000 people that I said before, they realized that they needed a bigger team.
Mm.
I mean, of course, they had the staff to serve the beer during the festival, security guys, all this kind of stuff, but to run a festival which grew itself big in the first edition, they realized that they needed more people working on it. So they contacted me and I said yes, I want to.
Claro
that,
que
that,
sí.
That same year to begin working on the 2013 edition, which was the second one. So. It's been growing. In terms of people coming to the festival, it's been slowly growing from the second edition. We hit 26,000 people entrance on the second edition.
Wow!
And from that point, we are now at 33,000. I mean, it's been slowly growing, but the big difference now is in terms of quality. We can deliver a much better festival now that we have the experience. I mean, it's like a six years experience, or you could say a 6 weekend experience.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's more like a year round work. It didn't used to be. Now it's a year round work because we're now also doing lots of things for the professional. I mean, at some point in 2013, I remember that we had a talk about how the festival had to evolve to be something else than just a festival for the consumers, for the drinkers, and try to get the professionals in there and try to do things for them. So we did some small stuff, maybe from the third edition, and now we have a huge part of the festival dedicated to them. There's lots of room dedicated just for professionals so that they can show their products, talk to each other, try to organize speed dating with each other. We're offering them lots of services now. I mean, and you can say that they appreciate it because lots of them turn to our festival, not just from Catalonia or Spain, but also from the rest of Europe, even from the States sometimes. So we get lots of people coming for the festival, and we try to make them comfortable and try to listen to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can find whatever they're looking for in a festival that is actually a place in which beer people from all the world unite that during that weekend. And apart from that, of course, the consumer experience has been also evolving. We are better delivering a better beer experience than we were. We're offering a wider range of beers. We try to look for a better variety. And in terms of local beer, but also in terms of beer from other parts of the world, it's always difficult to try to balance that, because it means that you have to know very well who is the people attending your festival. When we have been doing this festival for 3 years, it was very difficult to tell, and it has been evolving with time. But now we're more sure about who is the people that come in. And I think that each year we're delivering a better service to everyone, because we understand better what they're looking for.
Well, it's an impressive thing just going onto the website and looking and seeing not only is it a place for people to just come drink beer, but it looks like you have sections to for people to come and bring food and talk about food pairing with their beer, the gastro ales. And going down the list of all the breweries that show up, of course, I'm from Oregon, so I saw that Rogue Brewery was there, but you have a lot of breweries from America. But even the Brewers Association of America is a sponsor, if I'm not mistaken. That's exceptional to have American breweries head over there. But I saw breweries from Russia, breweries from Italy, Poland, Australia, and it was just such an interesting, exciting thing. I was excited that I found a Spanish beer in my little market in my little town, and that's hard to find. But to go to the Barcelona Beer Festival and just see these breweries from all over the world, and again, like we're talking about, getting that sense of culture, that sense of terroir, that sense of perspective. And being able to kind of see the differences, that seems that's an exciting thing, and I hope I make it there in 2020.
Yes, I hope that you can make it too. We're always trying to make it better for everyone that comes. What you were saying about these lectures on food and beer pairing, apart from drinking, apart from attending the professionals, we also try to disclose to people the inner side of beer if they're interested. So we're also planning this side event within the festival in which we talk about ingredients, in which we get 4 brewers and try to do a rotating tasting with them. 15 minutes with it, so that they can try and sample 2 beers with the guy who's actually producing them. Of course, food, as you said. Last year, for example, we had Melissa Cole with us. She delivered a very nice talk about food and beer, and we could also eat very good food. Plus. The pairing with a beer, with an exceptional speaker as she is. We're trying to get people who want to get to know the beers much more than just the drink. There's lots of things happening behind that glass of enjoyable stuff that you have. So we're trying to deliver this experience too. And about the breweries from all over the world that you were saying, Russia, Poland, all this stuff. That's interesting because you get to know lots of people in the beer industry. And one thing that my colleagues at the organization realized that it would be nice to do was try to make collaboration with other festivals. That is not brewing together a beer like brewers do, but trying to get the Barcelona Beer Festival in Russia to have a stand with the local beer from Barcelona at Russia, and at the same time during the Barcelona Beer Festival, the guys from Russia come to our festival and pour their own beer. Same thing we have done with Manchester that we have been doing for 3 or 4 years with Quebec. We're trying to do this kind of stuff because a very nice exchange with people who also run a festival. You can learn lots of things about them. They also learn things about what you do. And at the same time, you're delivering something unique to the beer drinker that comes to the festival. He gets to taste Russian beer, Polish beer, beer from whatever place. And it's being poured by the guys who run a festival at that part of the world and can tell you lots of things about that beer. That's different from what we have been doing with the rest of the beers in the festival, because we're pouring the beer ourselves. We buy the beer to each brewery and pour it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's like camera festivals in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
So it's kind of that concept. On the first edition, it was decided that it would be that way, because since we were very close with the brewers, it was like, okay, for once, you won't have to pour the beer, and you will be able to just roam around, drink beer, get drunk if you want, and just enjoy the festival. You will have not to worry about selling your beer, about trying to figure out what the customers are asking about your beer.
Mm-hmm.
You just go there, see that your beer is on tap, but you can enjoy the festival without any pressure, any hustle. That was kind of the idea. The concept was trying to have the same festivals that we could attend in the United Kingdom. Of course, with a local character, because we don't do cask, but we have had cask in the past, which was really enjoyable. But with a local character, trying to emulate those festivals.
So then we're running short on time, and I've got a couple more questions for you, but will you talk about the Barcelona beer competition? Are you guys, is the goal to become a significant major, well, I think you're probably already significant, a one of the major beer festivals, beer competitions in the world?
Well, the Barcelona Beer Challenge was like a natural extension for the festival. It was something that we were considering. Mm-hmm. For a time, and I don't think that we have a big game or something. I mean, it's just competition that we are holding, which actually worked out quite okay. We got lots of participants from all over the world, but I don't think that we have in our mind to grow big or to be a reference in the world or whatever. And I mean, we're just trying to do it the best that we can, and since every year we have had more participants, it's a pleasure to see that people are actually responding to whatever we do. But well, from this point to like ruling the world with our Barcelona Beer Challenge. Well, yeah. that's too big, I think.
What is the goal of the festival and the challenge then? I mean, what are you guys trying to achieve with such a wonderful event?
That people know about beer. That's our obsession. We started the festival and we keep doing the festival because we want the people in the street to know what craft beer is. We want them to know that beer is something different than what they learned that it was. And we also want to show people what's in beer. That it's been an effort for lots of people have been working in this industry to make this happen, and we're trying to disclose this part to the general public. We've always been very clear about the festival being a place for the beginner to be comfortable drinking beer, discovering a new world for him. Because we want to get those people, we want to get them to taste the beer, we want to get them to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And apart from that, we also want all the beer geeks to come and enjoy a good festival. But I would say that our major objective, our major aim has always been trying to get people to know about the beer culture, about the beer as a beverage, and about our local beer scene, of course, our local brewers, which we know most of them personally, and which we appreciate a lot what they do.
Fantastic. So the last couple of questions I have for you is, if you had the opportunity to choose your very last meal and your very last beer, what would it be?
My very last meal, my very last beer. Wow, that's a hard one. I suppose I would go for a Poet dry sausage. It's something very local. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even a meal. It's more like a snack or something that you make a sandwich with. I would certainly go for Fuet, and I would pair it with something local. Now that we have such wonderful beer, mm-hmm. I mean, I would go maybe for a Chimay Bleu, which is my all-time favorite beer, because it meant lots of things for me. But nowadays I would go for something local. I mean, I have two of the most wonderful European breweries just 15 miles from here at home. So I'll go for something from them. La Pirata, Guineo, some of these guys maybe.
Then the last question I have, well, nearly the last question I have for you is, given everything we've just discussed and in your experiences with beer, to you, why does good beer matter?
Why does good beer matter? Because beer matters. I mean, it's about beer, but it's also about people. It's about conversations. It's about just drinking late in a bar, talking with your family, with your friends, trying to make a better world. And if the beer, apart from beer, is good, you got a plus. So, yeah, that would be my answer.
Great. That's a great answer. Now, if people wanted to follow your blog or find the Barcelona Beer Festival, where could they find you online?
Yes, the Barcelona Beer Festival, the easiest way to follow the Barcelona Beer Festival is through Facebook or Twitter.
Okay.
Also, we have an Instagram profile, and the same thing for my blog. It's same stuff. My blog is beerrider.com. The festival's website is barcelonabeerfestival.com. But for the festival, it is better to follow the social networks.
Okay.
Because you got more spontaneous information, while the website is mostly working just near the festival, so that people can find the information.
Okay. Any last words you want to share with the listeners of this podcast?
Well, that it was a pleasure to have this interview with you, Jeremy. And I hope that many people get excited about what we're doing here with beer and come to visit. I can assure you that the experience is going to be worthwhile. I mean, we got lots of beautiful cities in this part of the world. And apart from that, you get good food, you get good wine, and you're getting better beer every year that passes. So you should really come.
I will do my very best. We are forming plans for winter of 2020, so I will call your bluff. Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much for talking with us. I appreciate all of your insight.
Thank you for the interview, Jeremy.
All right. Ciao.
Salud y birra.
Spanish beer is currently in a youthful phase of defining itself. But make no mistake, the Spanish culinary scene is so mature and so strong, it's a matter of time before Spanish beer breaks out and influences the world. I just hope you and I will be there when it happens. Join us in the next episode as we continue on to Lyon, France, to visit a brewery that has changed the way we experience our beer for the past 20 years. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters and visit me at goodbeermatters.net. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Salud.